Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. Get ready to be inspired as we explore the tapestry of our dynamic guest experiences and uncover the magic that lies in aligning with our whole selves. Amanda Prescaves is a true powerhouse with a diverse background as a D1 competitive swimmer turned professional off-road triathlete. She has seamlessly woven together her passions for food, mindset coaching, and community building in the heart of the Shenandoah Valley. Her story is a testament to the profound connection between how we think, move, eat, and live. As a local and regional food system consultant, author of the non-recipe book, and a professional USA off-road triathlete, Amanda is at the forefront of exploring the intersections of nourishment, movement, and innovation. Her coaching extends beyond athletic performance to the mindset development of high-performance teen athletes, drawing from her own experiences as a former D1 NCAA breaststroker and now a top-ranked world-level off-road endurance triathlete. As the author of the non-recipe book, she shares her holistic approach to life, encompassing design thinking principles, sports psychology, and sustainability environmental awareness. Welcome to the show, Amanda. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you, Dawn. It's so good to be here.
It is really good to be here. You got your bachelor's in exercise science from James Madison University. And as I understand it, you were in my husband's class.
I was hoping you'd mention that, which is ultimately how our worlds collide. Yes, your husband was my professor.
That's great.
It was great. I was in there actually just a couple of weeks ago speaking in one of the classes, and I ran into him, and I was like, wow, it's been a long time since I've been here. And I hadn't even shown my face. I was walking around the corner and someone goes, is that Amanda Prescaves' voice? And I'm like, it's almost been 10 years since I was in that program. And your husband's like, I remember exactly where you sat. You sat in the front row to the right in that very seat. And when you had hip surgery, you elevated your foot just in that area. And like, he just remembered that. And it kind of surprised me. You think that, oh, like you teach so many people. How mm-hmm. do you possibly remember where I sat in 2014 or 2013? And he was able to remember that. But it also made me so excited to return because it reaffirmed that was the best program I could possibly take in college. And I'm still so close to all my professors to this day. And being a part of the athletic community and outdoor rec community, I feel like those are my people.
Yeah.
And it's like going back, I was reminded like, this is where I belong.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you are back. It's an incredible journey that you have been on. And that's where I want to start.
Let's go.
Let's do it. Seriously, a competitive swimmer and now a professional USA off-road triathlete. Wow. Walk us through that journey. Tell us how this all happened.
So I was a competitive swimmer since I was 4 years old.
Okay.
Like I was a very active child. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm still a big child now, but my parents very quickly knew I needed an outlet when I was a kid. And that was the pool. I loved the water. I would walk to the pool every day as a kid. Our house lived like right behind it. And so it was such an outlet for me to express myself and make friends and find community. And I really found myself there. And that's where I thrived, was just being active. And also it was a place where I was welcome and I could show up as myself. And that wasn't always the classroom for me. I had a lot of energy. And so the pool was that place. Mm. And from the age of 4 until I swam all the way through college at JMU, I was spending, 20, 30 hours a week at the pool training. And I love that. That's my life. And I wanted that to continue being my life. And I didn't know what I wanted to do or who I wanted to be or how I wanted to live after college, but I knew I wanted to stay active. And I've always loved swimming. I love swimming, but I also love running and I also love biking. And after college, I wanted to try a triathlon, and I kind of tried a couple between like in the summers after college. But I didn't have a bike. Mm. I didn't know where to start. I couldn't afford a bike even. And so my first couple triathlons were because people lent me their materials, their gear, their equipment, their bikes, and they went really well. And I had a lot of fun. And, you know, people really encouraged me to keep going and trying it out and coaching me, teaching me how to clip in, guiding me, taking me to trails. And it really wasn't until I moved back to Harrisonburg that I had a job here. I was working at the university. We can maybe touch on that later, but I was working within the dining program and sustainability. And it was after I started the food truck in college. And I was so encouraged by my community to like get into biking. And so I did some more triathlons. I was finding success there and a lot of enjoyment. However, it wasn't until the pandemic when racing stopped that I found off-road triathlon, mountain biking and trail running. And that was sheerly by me just going out into the woods and doing what I loved. And I didn't know there were races involved in that. And then in 2021, I did my first off-road triathlon, found great success in that, and then just continued going to larger competitions, the world championship, traveling internationally, and getting into the ranks as a professional. And so the past couple of years, I've been able to compete elite and professionally doing that. But really, it doesn't feel like I'm a professional athlete. It feels like I'm just doing what I love and getting to show up and be challenged by other people that do what they love. And it just makes me a better person and feels like I can show up in my life more fully when I'm doing that.
That is amazing. You mentioned something in there that I did read and I didn't think I had it in my questions right now. And great. I don't. So I do want to touch on it. This food truck college. What in the world inspired you to do a food
It's so funny to talk about it still because it feels like a different life, but it also connects into everything that I'm doing now.
Okay.
So when I was studying exercise science, and maybe I share this because so many times we think we're taking a path in life and then it takes us in a different direction. And I think it's more important that we begin pursuing something that matters to us and be open to where it can eventually take you. But I studied exercise science because I wanted to be a physical therapist. I'd always been involved in athletics and I've had a lot of injuries in my time doing that. And I wanted to help people like I was helped. And some of those injuries were two hip surgeries while I was in college. And so after my sophomore year, I redshirted a year and I had both my labrums repaired. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to continue swimming after that, let alone ever be a triathlete. Mm-hmm. And during that time, it actually forced me to take rest. And in, you know, what would that be like the 15 years that I had been swimming, I had never taken more than 2 weeks off of swimming. Rest was not a part of the equation and definitely wasn't talked about like it is now in terms of the mental, physical, and emotional side of rest that is so critical for an athlete to not just recover, but have longevity in life and sport. And so that was the first time I like had my butt sat on a couch for more than 2 weeks. And in that time, I really wasn't sure who I was. I'd only seen myself through the lens of an athlete as a swimmer. And it was really challenging for me. That was where I had my own struggles with mental health and also wasn't sure of what I wanted to do if I'm not going to be a swimmer. And very quickly, all that energy that I channeled into swimming became in my mind. And my mind was swirling, coming up with ideas, seeing opportunities and problems, you know, but not just seeing that as a problem, seeing as how can I fix that? And so the food truck came about because when I was living in Harrisonburg, I knew we were at the Mecca of local food in the Shenandoah Valley. And why wasn't it being served on the campus? It just like blew my mind that I was also on a campus where everyone is so passionate or curious about pursuing a career path and getting experience, but then they weren't getting real world experience. And so I was curious about how it could look if students were running a locally sourced food truck and that brought healthy, nutritious food to students, but also real world work opportunities for them to manage the business, to create the design for the truck, to do sustainability projects, to meet and help local farmers. And that's where it came about. It came to life in 2016 after I graduated, actually. And that was my introduction into local food systems, into the community, into life outside of campus. And that's what really propelled my path into entrepreneurship, into business, into local food systems, and realizing like I can take an idea, I can take the littlest seed of an idea and turn it into something real that changes the lives of people. And ever since then is really what has given me the courage to pursue other ideas that I've had and take the path that I have in life.
I really love that. Now, is this food truck still operational today?
Yeah, it is. I also created a course out of it that, like 3-credit course out of the university. And there's been a range of different partnerships. It was a interdisciplinary, like cross collaborative project across different majors on campus and lots of different students. And so my vision wasn't for me to have a hands-on approach with it, because that wouldn't be able to sustain itself if I needed to be involved, because there's obviously a constant churn in students. And so it's changed at different universities. So I think the truck is at Clemson right now.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of changed around the country and gone to different schools. And really, I'm not really that involved with it anymore. I do a lot of other things, but it's continued on without me, which is amazing.
Wow. That's just one of your many legacies that you're leaving. Oh. You're welcome. And after you got your BS in exercise science, you went to Wake Forest University and got a master's in business.
I did. Yeah. So I got a master's in business management there. It was a hybrid year-long program. And I never saw myself as a business person. I felt so out of place in an environment like that, coming from an exercise science program where it is socially acceptable for me to show up to class in sweatpants and chlorinated hair. And that was the culture.
Yes.
It was, everyone was pursuing a lot of outdoor and just like athletic challenges. Going to business school, I really had to put on a different hat and see a different world. And that was good for me. It gave me so much experience and perspective to, in the corporate world, nonprofit and business in general, in that environment. And it was really great for me. I felt really out of place at times. I felt like an imposter. I didn't feel like I belonged in that environment. However, over the years, I found my place in it and how I can show up as myself in those environments and not put on a mask or have to dress a certain way, that know like I'm accepted and my ideas and the passion and the contributions that I bring, I don't need to wear a certain outfit or look a certain way to do that, that like I can still show up as myself, but also share certain language and understand these systems and how they work. And school was really helpful for that.
Yes, I would say. And speaking of school, you alluded to this a little bit earlier that you, out of all the many lives, one of them is teaching in the university or in the university experience. So what role do you play in that?
Well, that
or have or currently?
Well, so the going to the classroom was more so being asked to be like a guest speaker or guest professor. And it's always different. I feel like I can speak to a lot of different parts of my life. So it just depends. That class was on my path from being a student to like being a professional athlete, and also like my philosophy of sport and life, which I love to talk about.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So that class was really like how I approach being who I am, and not just as an athlete, but a person too. And on longevity and sport, I see myself as doing what I do forever. Mm. Like when I talk about being a professional athlete, whether I'm getting first place or I'm barely crawling to the finish line, I just want to keep moving for the love of it. And that's what keeps me going. And that's a lot about what we talked about in classes. What does it mean to be a female athlete in the world that we live in? What is like gender equity? What are the opportunities that I have? How do I create my life to be able to pursue these things? I love the philosophical side of that as well. Mm-hmm. And it connects to the coaching that I do with teen athletes and helping them to see that it isn't just about sport. It's about how this carries over into life, and that sport may end one day. Mm-hmm. I hope it doesn't, but know that everything that you're doing right now and how you're training and how you're showing up is going to carry over into the next thing that you do. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I didn't realize that for a long time. Mm. I didn't know those challenges that I faced in the pool were somehow going to give me resilience and handle adversity in the workplace as well, or how to like have tough conversations and relationships. And when we have the confidence to realize the person we're building in one capacity in one part of our life will always stay with us and carry on, I think we can have more belief in who we are and what we can do.
Is that the mindset piece that you teach the teen athletes?
Yeah. And so we focus on different things. Just meet the individual where they are. This can be anything like self-confidence, belief in the self, but also how to handle performance pressures, self-talk, handling nerves. There's so many hard and big emotions you experience in those high pressure situations, especially at really competitive levels. And oftentimes we're not taught those by, you know, traditional coaching. It takes having a mentor or someone who's been in those shoes to be able to meet you where you are, especially with younger girls, for them to see someone that is continuing to do this and like, hey, I've been there. Like, I've been through the really hard stuff too. And I might not have the answer for them, but I might be able to guide them to figuring that out for themselves.
I want to talk about that a little bit more. I didn't have a girl, but I did have a boy.
Yes, I remember that. Landon? Is that?
Landon.
Yeah.
And he was a D1 athlete in football.
UNC?
UNC That's Chapel right. Hill on a full ride. And so he, as a male athlete, would experience the pressures and before games, that kind of thing. So when you talk about that and you're working with your teen athletes, these young women, what are some tips or tricks, I guess, on how to handle that you can share? Just some idea of how you work with them on handling the pressure and the nerves.
And I'm so happy to talk about this because it doesn't just apply in sports. Mm. It applies for any situation where we start to feel pressure. But a lot of people come to me because of nerves. They notice that in maybe they're putting in all the work at practice and they're going great times or performing really well with their team. However, when they get to a place where the stakes are high, they feel themselves crumble or their self-talk gets really chattery and negative or they don't feel prepared. And so a lot of times our conversations start about like understanding and tapping into like what is that voice in your head? When does that come up? When do you start to notice these things? So first creating awareness around it. Self-awareness is the most important part to changing any behaviors, noticing it. Because if you want to change it, you must notice it first and notice when it's not serving you. And I don't even like to use the term negative self-talk. It's just this chatter, this little monkey voice, this monkey brain that's in our head. And the thing is, it serves us. There is purpose to it because the reason why we have that voice is because we care. We want to perform well. It actually matters to us. And so when we begin to reframe that voice in our head as this is because this matters to me, and that can be a strength. That's something beautiful. It's a gift that I have. We start to reframe that voice and then we notice it and we can change it. And so we talk about how these nerves actually benefit us somatically, emotionally, mentally. So an example is like maybe our hands start to shake a little bit or we feel our heart rate speed up. Those are physiological changes that are happening in our body to get us to perform. We wouldn't be able to, in swimming, for example, dive into the water and go at high speed immediately if there wasn't that adrenaline. And so we start to recognize, where do we land in this kind of like zone of optimal arousal? Are we too nervous? Are we not prepared enough? And so we start to recognize, okay, what's happening in my body? What's happening in my mind? And let's create a new association with our relationship to that change. Recognizing that this stress that we're feeling is actually a stress enhancing mindset. And it's a way we can look at this as something that is serving us. And then if it isn't serving us and it's causing us to not feel present in our competition or not perform at our best, how do we calm ourselves down? And so we might do things like visualization, breathing exercises. We might do art, drawing. We might speak it out. We find ways to express ourselves and understand like, how do we calm ourselves down? We might do race day strategies. This might be work we do at the end of every day. And so I'm getting into the weeds with this, but it applies to anyone. So if you're about to go public speak and you're feeling those jitters too, like what can you do? Box breathing and like breathing in for 4, holding for 4, letting out for 4, and doing that again until we feel our heart rate come down. Can we imagine ourselves going into that setting and feeling really prepared and confident? Is there a mantra we can have in our head that reminds us that we are capable and ready? How do we prepare for that setting so we know that we can trust ourselves to show up and not feel like we're going to crumble? These are all different strategies that, yes, we apply in the setting of sport, but really I'm teaching them skills for life. This isn't just about how they show up in that competition. This is preparing them for the rest of their life to be able to apply these tools.
I really love how you use the word reframe and how this can be transferable to other skills and things they do in their life. Because as you were speaking, I do stand-up comedy.
Yes, that's right.
Right? And so you can feel those nerves and or you can feel that excitement or the heart racing a little bit more right before you're getting ready to go mm-hmm. out on stage.
I would feel that.
And I'll take, as soon as I notice it, your awareness tip is really a great one. As that's exactly what I'll say to myself. You feel this because you care.
Yeah.
You feel this because you love to make people laugh and you are ready.
Yes.
And then that calms me down.
Yes.
You know, is this go share your gift because mm-hmm. you love to make
and other people
laugh.
Will feel that too.
Yes.
When they see you show up in that way with that reminder, they're going to recognize that you care. And maybe you do slip up some words and we're all human.
Oh, yeah.
And that just means that they can connect with you in another way.
Like, yes.
It's okay to be vulnerable and like have the courage to show up even if we don't feel like we're ready. And I used to hate how much I cared, so much. Mm. I remember as a little girl, I would always lean to writing to process my feelings. And
I do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I still use that tool. It's my notebook right here. I love
she
writing.
She does have it, Laughers, right in front of the mic.
Just in case I have something to share, I want to write it down. But I remember telling my parents, like, I just wish I didn't care so much because it wouldn't be so painful when things didn't go well. Because I went a long time without improving my performance, many years where I didn't see any benefit. And I kept wondering, why am I even doing this? Like, if I'm not improving, if I'm not growing, if I'm not seeing the success of my hard work, why do I keep showing up to practice and waking up at 4 a.m. and swimming again in the evenings? What's the point? And I had to remind myself, it's because this matters to you. Mm-hmm. And like, it might not pay off now, but it will pay off eventually. And that resilience has carried me so far, like to my life. Now there's so many times I've gone tireless months and years without seeing the outcome. And I have to be focused in the process of my work to keep going. And like learning that really is what sustains me.
And that is another life tip and wisdom nugget right there. It's the beauty is in the journey, not the destination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And embracing that, even when the things aren't going the way you think they should or as fast as you think they should. You're missing stuff that you can be learning and celebrating at the same time
exactly.
while you're on the journey.
And that's how like getting outside feels for me. It's so much of how do I make this day magical? How do I make this day special? Yesterday, my friend and I, we got out and did a 10-mile long trail run into the national park. And it was just amazing. There was a foot of snow at the top. We were prancing through it. Our dog was running through it. It was just, we were catching the sunset before we descended. And I was like, this is why I do it. This is why I train for life. And when I do hard things like that, I know that outcome will come eventually, but I need to enjoy this very moment right here where I am.
And,
like this train that always comes through our co-working space, right? In the most opportune times. I just have to appreciate it for what it is.
We're going to acknowledge that because I think it's a part of the charm of this podcast. So hold those
and
thoughts
this
so that we can enjoy this moment. So we are in the Perch working space above Magpie Diner, which is across from the Liberty Mercantile and Laughers. You will remember that you heard Abby Chick from Blake Morris Flowers, a podcast episode, and the train going through interview with her. So this is,
of course,
round two with Amanda now.
Yeah. If you record any podcast here, you might get a little bit of that charm. I it's always happening in my calls too. People are like, is your building shaking? Is that wall, is that photo behind you moving or what's that noise? Yeah, it's a train. I love Harrisonburg.
But back to the snow cap.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. And it was just magical. And so it's important. We have to recognize those moments and the beauty. And like, we can appreciate the process. It's not all about this like grueling hard work. Like, we can feed our soul in the process of getting to like a final outcome. But really, I realize what I enjoy is the moments in between, the training, the getting out with friends, the seeing the sunrise, even if that means waking up at 4 a.m. That's the magic of life.
That is the magic of life. And another thing I found out about you in prepping for this interview that really intrigued me is the fact that you have ADHD, which also explains the many things that you
do. Can't tell? I'm very high functioning.
You are very high functioning, but I think it's a beautiful thing that you have learned how to leverage as a strength for yourself. You have an injury background. You have had different challenges. You've been alluding to those so far in this interview. How do you integrate all these experiences into your coaching?
Mm. Well, I'll say those experiences and going through troubles in my youth in particular, mm-hmm. with ADHD, it wasn't something I really talked about a lot as a kid. I was really ashamed about it, actually, because I found that when people knew that I had ADHD, they perceived that energy or bubbliness they once perceived was now a distraction, or that energy is now too much. And so, unfortunately, I found that with my teachers too. It felt like this, it wasn't really like in a school setting. I did not feel very welcomed. And ironically, as I got older, those traits and qualities about me, my energy, how I showed up, just what I brought to everything I did, became to be what people treasured about me. Mm-hmm. It's like what my professors loved and what made me a great entrepreneur and a great professional athlete. And I get emotional talking about that because I'm so glad I never changed. Like, yeah. I'm glad that I didn't fit a mold that I kept being forced into, and that I didn't think that those qualities were detrimental or toxic or bad, because that's a lot of what I was told. And I was medicated for a long time. And it wasn't until after college that I stepped away from that. And I have a support. I have a therapist. I have a professional psychologist I work with to do work and make sure that I have tools to show up in the way that I want to in this world and do it with my full self. And I'm not, whether you need to take medication or not, there's no shame in that. It was just important for me to feel like, actually, I can manage this really well with my lifestyle by getting out and being active, and also like being really focused when I do sit down and do my work. Or maybe not sitting down so much, and a lot of my work being stuff like this, where I'm brainstorming with people, going to meetings, showing up. I have a lot of energy to bring to that.
Yeah.
And so maybe I'm not meant to sit down all the time either.
I don't think so.
So building your life around like your own lifestyle is really important. But those experiences I had as a kid have really helped me develop empathy and show up and connect with other teenagers that might be struggling or having something that's challenging or being in a world they don't feel like they're fit to be in. And if I hadn't had those experiences, I wouldn't know how to connect with them or be able to listen and have empathy in the same way that I do now and be like, I do know what that feels like. And hopefully through my example and my leadership, show them that like, do not change, like be who you are. And like, we will get through this. And like, you are beautiful the way you are, and just keep showing up like that. I really needed that when I was younger, and I didn't have that. But I had plenty of other mentors and teachers and coaches and my family who did support me. And that made all the difference too.
It certainly has.
Yeah.
And you have taken many talents to integrate them in different ways.
And it hasn't been easy doing that. It felt like it's confusing at times.
Oh yeah.
Like sometimes when I share a lot of the work I do, I would be lying if I said I didn't feel like maybe someone won't understand me, or that maybe
that.
I'm less of a professional because
I do a million things.
I do a lot of things and they think I'm scattered or I can't show up fully. But the point is that like, I'm a multi-potentialite. I have a lot of different passions and I can show up fully to each of them. And I know when I need to focus in on one and when I can spread out, and there's seasons for that, and those seasons change. And I've learned to listen to my body and my cues on when it's best for me to focus in on one thing versus when I can kind of put my energy into many different things. And that's allowed to evolve too.
I really appreciate you sharing that term. I want to repeat that, multi-potentialite.
Yes.
I share this with you. I do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I founded X2 Comedy. I do stand-up comedy. I produce the X2 Comedy shows.
That's right.
I do this podcast. There are other things that I'm working on. Yeah. I just wrote an article for the Daily News Record. And that's not all to pat myself on the back. It's just to relate to what you're saying.
Yes.
I feel like I can't just do one thing.
No, and many of us aren't meant to.
Yeah.
And that's what's beautiful, is when we actually see other people doing lots of different things. And sometimes they can seem unrelated. I find the connections between all the work that I do, whether other people do or don't. Then I know I can show up as my best self in all of those, because I'm expressing myself, like you said, as a writer, as a speaker, as a teacher, as a parent. There's so many roles that we play. Like, we're not meant to just be one of those. There's actually a lot of benefit to having self-complexity, which is recognizing the multiple different roles that we play in our lives, and If you think of yourself as like a house with many different rooms, you can go in one room for a bit, and but you're allowed to leave that room and go into another room when it calls you as well. And actually having those different rooms allows us to develop our whole self. And when one room door closes, we're not fully attached to that one identity. So there's not pressure on us to just be good at that one thing. And that can make you good at everything, because you don't feel pressured to be like, I'm only a writer or I'm only a podcast host. You're all these things. And it allows us to actually like put more of ourselves into things without fear of failure, which is really important.
And I want to know what you think about this in terms of the multi-potential, because we both share this. I had struggled through my whole life doing a whole bunch of different things. I enjoy health and fitness. I enjoy laughing and comedy and joy and making people laugh a whole lot more. I probably could do comedy videos about my failures in fitness and certainly make jokes about it. So along the way, I figured out, you know, if that's what you really like, then lean in on that and start building a life around that, which my life 7 years ago before making that decision now looks so much different when I centered all the things about what around what I was most deeply passionate about, which I'm watching you do that around health and fitness and nutrition and mindset. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are and advice for other multi-potentialites out there who may not have identified yet what they want to singly focus on. And do you kind of agree, or what do you think about finding that first and then building your life around it? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, this is very relevant because I'm constantly doing this. Okay. I'm still doing this, right?
Yeah, because multi-potentialites, we struggle. So this is going to be helpful information in their discovery and in their journey.
So I personally find I do best when I really care about something. Okay. And that care and that why to it is constantly evolving. So I'll give a very like summarized version of a little bit of my journey, but it did start in caring about exercise science and performance. And I wanted to be a physical therapist. I wanted to coach and work with like elite athletes. But then when I started the food truck, I realized, well, if we really want to care for ourselves, it starts with what we feed ourselves. But then I realized another layer. It's not just about what we feed ourselves. It's how we source our food, where it comes from, how it gets there. That goes to the farmer. It goes to the systems level of food. So I started to like unpack things. I was very focused on the individual level. Then I was seeing like personal nutrition, personal health. Then I was realizing, oh, we have some systems we need to fix if we want to create opportunities for people to even be healthy, which is like eating and having access to the foods that they need and should have. And so as I got deeper into this work, I started to get more curious, like, what is the root of this? And even with my own writing, I weave in all those experiences in my book and recognizing like, okay, here's what we can do on an individual level, but there's still all these system changes that need done too. And I would say my book focuses very much on the individual level, but then when I do my consulting, it's focused on the systems level. And so I did allow myself to change. I did allow myself to pivot, and I did do coaching and I did work with athletes, but then I realized, oh, I want to create these opportunities for everyone. And that's how my work has continued to evolve and shift. So now being one that spends a lot of time recreating, being outside, connecting to my body and nature, not everyone also has the opportunity for that. And so I've started to ask more questions about how do I create that opportunity for other people to have a relationship with it in a way that they want to. They don't need to be a professional athlete. They might just be trying to commute, or they just want to go on a hike with their family. But how do they get access to those trails or those opportunities to even be active? Are cities even designed that way? Like, I start to ask more questions. I start to get more curious, and I follow that nudge and I go down it and I have conversations with people. I read books. It ends up opening doors and opportunities, and I'm not scared to change it. I'm not scared to, while I do a lot of things, there are times to shut some doors and open others.
I agree.
And I leave room for that.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with changing and realizing that I might not be an expert in this one thing at this one time, but by asking questions and listening to people, I can continue learning more and growing into it. And this is what matters to me right now. And that's just life. I'm just being a humaning. Like, I think that's ultimately at the end of the day, like, I'm just trying to do that and like stay curious and learn more and realizing like, I'm not an expert in it, but like whatever I'm working on, I really want to do it really dang well and go all in. And I feel like that's a service to others when I can do that and myself.
Yeah. Being curious is a big component, I think, for the multi-potential.
Yeah.
I mean, for all of us, but especially for the multi-potential. Yeah. It's getting curious about yourself, what you like, why you like it.
Yeah.
You know, being okay with the change, which, by the way, change is your best friend.
It does.
If you really think about your life.
It does. Yeah. The ripples are huge. And, and like you asked if there was advice for that. And so it's like, I don't know if that was quite the best advice, but my advice in that was to be curious and actually pursue those things that are nudging at you. And that's what being, that we constantly have many different times in our life where something excites us and makes us curious. And how I describe it is like, I get these little zaps down my arm and it feels like it comes from my heart and just goes to my hand. And I just can't stop thinking about it and writing about it and researching it. And that's when I know I need to go follow that nudge. And we should listen to that more. Because that's where energy comes from. And we got to follow that energy. And then that energy could shift and change. But like, pursue it, follow it, see what's there.
Yes.
And like, that's where the excitement can emerge. Because sometimes we don't know what we want to do. Or we feel stuck. Or we don't feel like we're in the right place. Just like, keep your ear out and your body out for those nudges and those little glimmers that you have. Mm-hmm. And I find that I haven't been proven wrong by following them. Like, it's always worked for me.
I agree with that. I would say I've had the most success so far by following those.
Yeah.
And also figuring out, well, why do I love comedy so much? Why is that so important to me? And I have, in my own discovery, figured out, you know, I think it's the best medicine in the world.
It
in
is.
The darkest and it hardest times of my life, comedy has been a healing part of that.
There's a lot of research around it too.
Yes.
Like that says actually laughing is necessary for our health and longevity.
Yeah.
People like live the longest and have the least disease are the ones that like live in close proximity to their best friends and people they love that are laughing.
They're laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's part of your health and fitness journey,
it
in
is.
My opinion.
Well, and so actually as a professional athlete, I, you know, you'd think studying exercise science, I mean, I sure do. I know everything about programming, the correct training, how I need to periodize it, when I need to be doing certain intensities, how I should train. But I pick my days based on who can join me. I plan my training around, can this person go out with me this day? Where are we going to go? What do we want to see? And truly put the fun in it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me a good athlete. And I look at that as I know the science of training and I also know the art.
Yeah.
Which is really making it fun. And my friend and I were just giggling so much yesterday as we were slipping and sliding through the snow.
It's the best.
It was so fun. And like my dog was just like, she gets zoomies when she runs in the snow and she digs her head in it and like sniffs it and throws it up in the air and tries to eat it. And it's like, that's pure joy.
Yeah.
You need that. And that's what lights me up.
Yeah. I love all of the things that you're doing. And I like this book that you have written. Mm-hmm. It was released 2022. Mm-hmm. It very much was curious to me, the title, the non-recipe book. It's like, what in the world is she doing now? What is this book about and what inspired you to write it?
Well, it is meant to be a curiously inciting podcast because
here we go.
I started writing that book in 2019, going back to my personal journey with around food and just my life. I had always been one to make my own lunches, to make my own food, to create things in the kitchen. And people would often ask me, like, how did you make that? What did you make? And I thought, okay, I'm finally going to write a cookbook and I'm finally going to share my creations with people. And I'm not kidding you. It took me a week. I had this whiteboard and I was writing down my process. And I was like, this is how I'm going to track my recipes, is I'm going to write down what I make when I make it. And there's my book. It very quickly into the process, I was like, I am the last person to be writing a recipe book. I have never followed a recipe in my whole life. And I haven't in life either. And so it really dawned on me that this is about taking what you learn in the kitchen and carrying it over to life. And it's about figuring out your own recipe, your own process, your own way, and starting in the kitchen. And so it's about using what you have, working with your needs, working with just what you got in front of you and making something beautiful with it. Doing the best with what you have. That's really what it comes down to. And I weave personal essays into research, into science, into a lot of these worlds that I've had experiences in. And I wrap that into the non-recipe book, which is about creating your own recipes with the resources that you have. And it's been a really beautiful process. It took me 3 years to write that. Wow. Because it changed a lot. It changed a lot in that process. And it was really hard for me to articulate what my process was in the kitchen that I was trying to get across to the reader. Mm. And I was fortunate enough to work with a good friend who is an illustrator. And we really articulated that in a plateful, but also informative way that invites people into the kitchen, gives them a little bit of guidance, but I want it to be fun for people. I don't want it to feel like a chore, something that they dread doing, which nourishing yourself and caring for yourself should be something we really take pride in and enjoy. And we all need to eat.
Mm. Oh yeah.
We all need to eat. So we might as well enjoy the process of it. And that's what it's about. It doesn't need to be perfect. Doesn't need to look great, but it needs to work for you. And that's what it comes down to. And so, yeah, I had 26 of these non-recipes in the book, as well as my personal essays and writing. And it's over at Parentheses. People can buy it from me. And it was a really beautiful time to release it last year around the holiday season and share that with people. And it's great to still talk about it.
And Parentheses, what is that?
Oh, that's the independent bookstore across the street. I point to it right now because I can see it out the window. And it's Harrisonburg's only and first independent bookstore, owned by Amanda Friss.
Oh,
and yeah, it's lovely to see other local authors, but also just readers, enthusiastic readers and learners in that store. And to have that right across the street. That's
right
amazing.
Across the street in the new Liberty Street
that's
Mercantile
right.
building.
Yeah,
that is really great. And as long as we're talking about recipes, I'd be remiss not to talk about this fantastic popcorn from our sponsor, Pre-Popsterous, Shenandoah Valley's only award-winning popcorn. It's so good, isn't it?
I'm not going to stop eating this the whole time. See ya.
See ya. It truly is delicious.
Oh, my gosh.
And speaking of locally sourced, this popcorn is because their kernels are grown right here in the valley.
Hey.
Yeah. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I know.
And so, fun fact.
Okay. Tell
fun
me.
Fact. Tisha, the owner of Preposterous, and I were in the same community small business development business class. I started my food truck in the same time in the same class that Tisha started Preposterous. So she's my day one.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that. Yep. It's a small world.
Yep. So I'm a major supporter of Tisha and her family. I even teach them some lessons.
Oh, that's cool. Yep. I didn't know that too. Yep. Even smaller world. I can't wait to talk to her about that next time I see her.
And that's why I love living here. It's a small valley.
It is.
There's so many connections and ways that we show up professionally or as friendships with people. And yeah,
that's what makes
we go
it.
Back. And that's why I live here.
Well, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it special here.
It is.
And her, I appreciate her factory too, because it's 100% nut free.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really important for a lot of people these days.
Yes.
And don't forget, laughers, this popcorn makes a perfect gift for any occasion, birthdays, anniversaries, literally anything you can think of.
Be a great stocking stuffer.
Yes. Well, this will release after Christmas, so remember it next Christmas.
All right. Yeah. New Year's stuffer. Valentine's Day.
There we go. That's it. You'll hear it. But that's remember that. Do they have Valentine's Day
We're
going to
make one.
You and I, we can do anything.
That's right. Next business idea.
That's it. See, multimillionaire somewhere
out
there.
You just got to put it out there.
It's our idea first. All right.
I'm willing to share it.
And laughers, you can get a discount. Just be sure to use promo code LAUGH15 to get the 15% discount when you visit prepopsterous.com. That's PrePopsterous.com. And you can choose one of their many flavors today. Now back to you, Amanda. Speaking of nourishment and movement, these are ways to explore our inner and outer world. How has this philosophy of yours influenced your own life and advice that you give others, especially in the context of health and fitness?
Well, I shared that I spent a lot of my life in a pool.
I love that.
And that's a good flavor of popcorn.
I know. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. I had to pour
I'll be
one.
Munching.
I'm not going to be sorry. It's great. Yeah.
I won't be able to talk if I have that in my mouth the whole time. This is how you're getting all the popcorn. So I spent a lot of my life in a pool, and I love the water. Don't get me wrong. But it wasn't until after college that I even ventured out into the great outdoors, into the forest, into the fresh air and out of a chlorinated pool deck. And I, you know, actually weaving in our conversations around ADHD, there was a component that I was missing in caring for myself. Mm. And that was being outside. That was getting sunshine on my face. That was breathing in fresh air. That was getting out into the forest and hearing the sounds of the birds and the quieting of my inner chatter and listening to my breath and connecting with community while on the trails. And when you asked about like using it as a way to care for and nurture and nourish our inner and outer self, mm-hmm. that's what I mean. Like it is going outdoors is so great for me, but when things are great for us and they care for our whole being, mm-hmm. we can then do better within the world. And so it has connected me not only deeper to myself, but to the people that I'm running with and to nature and to like noticing the patterns of our world. Like the littlest thing is like the incremental differences every day that the sun is rising or the certain birds that I'm hearing or the flowers that are blooming or the smells that I have after a rain or the certain little changes in temperature throughout the seasons. All of those guide my lifestyle. It guides the way I eat. And I started to pick up on these patterns throughout the seasons and adapting my life to it is naturally cyclically living. It's changing my training throughout the year based on what my interests are, what's calling me outdoors, if I need to stay inside and do less during the winter and tend to myself and stay warm, take rest, take breaks, or in the summer when I'm going 100 miles per hour and doing ultra events. I'm learning to listen to that. And that comes with like learning and listening to what my body needs, but also we are our environment too. And so when I engage in the outdoors and see what those seasons are giving me and telling me, I can better guide my own life. And so that is the little bit of the understanding and meaning to me behind that statement.
As your holistic approach and philosophy to life. In the winter, it does get cold around here. Yes. And so I'm hearing you slow down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So do you do more mind type work in the winter? Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like?
We're in the thick of it.
Yeah. And when they hear this, they'll be in the thick of it. So I'm curious to share this with the laughers.
Things started to dial back a little bit for me. My season ended and coincided perfectly with the middle of fall in October. And I could start to feel like the rainier days coming in. I was like, I don't really want to be running, 50 miles out in this. Mm-hmm. And this, there's times like we should do hard things. And I did a long run on Sunday in the pouring down rain with the cross country girls. And it was so fun. I've been running with the girls at JMU and we had a blast doing that and bonding over it. But that's not supposed to be there every day. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my winter looks like scaling back. Because I'm a triathlete, I'm doing multiple workouts a day, an integration of strength training or biking or running or swimming or yoga. Like I also work on my mobility or just my meditation, but it looks a lot more calmer. And so I'll be swimming more, like easy swims or going for just like longer trail runs in the mountain where I'm staying warm. It's a little bit less biking where I'm getting cold a lot. And I'm sleeping a lot more. Like an example, like in December, I've been off my phone and I've been off social media. And so giving my mind a break from like being on my phone, responding to things, just like the urgency of life and reading more, like starting my evenings earlier, like have dinner at like 5 or 6 and like read a book or just hang out with friends and play board games. Like my life looks a little bit different than in the summertime. I'm out in the woods until 9 o'clock and when it gets dark and then I'm eating dinner super late too. And so my lifestyle changes and it's just like a lot of it comes from, well, I don't really want to be in the freezing cold right now. And don't get me wrong. I'm still training. I'm still doing that. I still put on my layers and I get outside and I do the work, but I'm allowed to adapt that and have that look a little bit different depending on the season.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So now this question is coming to mind. I love how you're paying attention to the season and the patterns. And so your schedule looks a little different. Mm-hmm. How do you organize your schedule with the many things that you do? Are you one of the ones that 2 hours on this, 15 minutes on this? Like how do you prioritize and schedule your life to get all these things done, Miss Potential, Multi-Potential?
Well, this handy dandy notebook really helps.
Ah, so there's a lot in there.
Yeah. Like I just turned to a page where like I had each day of the week lined out with what I would do. And then I had like each category of my life. So this was like consulting, coaching, sport, writing, perch, wedding. Cause I got married this year. And so
thank you.
And we did the wedding ourselves. And so it was very DIY. And so there was a lot of planning. That was like a job in itself. That was a part-time job. One that was very beautiful. And so like, that's an example of how I would categorize it. And then I move, like, I like to chunk my work. And
what does that mean?
So I don't want to be doing 100 things at one time.
Okay.
And it does feel, I don't like when I'm answering an email to someone, but also finishing writing a piece while also like about to hop on a meeting. I want to be really present in all the different things that I do. And sometimes it would work out where, you know, someone asked me a question or I'm doing something and I get pulled away. But for the most part, I set out times in my schedule where I'm like, you're going to do this for the day. Like you're going to focus on writing this blog post. Mm-hmm. Or finishing a chapter for your book, or you're putting a lot of your calls. Like I do a lot of my calls on the same days around the same time. So I'm in that headspace to coach and not bouncing from like my coaching headspace to my consulting project.
Okay.
So I like chunking it like that. That works.
Chunking it. Yeah. I thought I heard junking it.
Oh, chunking
it. No. Okay.
Makes sense. Chunking. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And so that helps me be really focused and show up in the work. And then I use tools like sticky notes and my planner, a hand planner with writing in it. And I block off my calendar so people can't schedule meetings with me when I have already like commitments with other people. And communicating that schedule to people I'm working with is important too. So I try to make that very transparent. And sometimes I nail it, sometimes I don't.
But a human experience,
and I'm always learning. I do like the mornings are a really important time for my writing before a lot of other people are working. And so that I think we need a priority. Get that thing done in the quiet of the day when people aren't asking anything of you, if it matters to you. Mm-hmm. So when I was working on my book, that was a lot of writing in the morning when it was quiet before I had notifications on my computer. And if you can afford to do that for yourself and maybe you have a family and that's really early in the morning, it's a gift to give that to yourself too. And you deserve to have that. You deserve to prioritize your own goals and dreams. And sometimes it's a little uncomfortable to get up early and do that, but ultimately it's a gift to give ourselves that too. And I try to remember that even like getting up early for a run or getting up to write is like, this is a gift to myself. Mm-hmm. This is a gift to commit to what I said I would do. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to honor that. It's important to honor our commitments.
Yeah, I like, yeah, setting time for ourselves is hugely important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And scheduling it in the planner.
Yes.
Same with health and fitness.
Yes.
I'm going to the gym at 8 a.m. or 7 a.m.
I'm
going to
go lift and mountain bike after our session together. You know, like I put that in my agenda. It's a meeting for me. It's a meeting to myself and maybe another friend that I'm going with.
Yeah, that's the best part.
So it is. It does and keeps it fun. So you actually want to show up and do it.
I do. I'm a group fitness kind of person. Yeah. Some people, they like to do it solo because that energizes them and have that time just for them. And it just depends on who you are.
Yeah. Know yourself and know like what excites you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what makes sense to you. One of the things you do is a food system consultant. What does that mean?
Oh, it's a range of work. I got into that work years ago when I was working on another business that I didn't end up pursuing. It was like a Blue Apron, but for kids' lunches. I was trying to teach kids how to like cook for themselves and like take ownership of their health from a young age. I was being mentored by a food system consultant in the DC area. And we would work on a range of projects. I'll try not to get too technical because it doesn't really apply to many of the listeners, but projects that helped with like value chain coordination in communities or network creation. So like supply chain, understanding like how food gets to a distributor, to a store, to a farm, or to a consumer. Food hubs.
What's a food hub, if I may interrupt for a second? I don't even know what that means.
So like there's, especially... We learned this in the pandemic when the world shut down. We had a lot of shortages in these stores. And so we were like, oh my gosh, have been out of flour for months. And it's like, oh yeah, that's because that's coming from Europe and there's no one that can work and ship that over. And so it's really important to develop local and regionalized food systems So mm-hmm. we're self-sustaining and sufficient and reliant. And the thing is that we can do that. We have so much food growing around us, and so do many other communities. But with the way our industrialized food system is set up, is we're sourcing all of our lettuce from California mm-hmm. and we're getting all of our corn from the Midwest. Whereas there's a lot of people that can grow that here. And so Absolutely. Food hubs are a way to create distribution and purchasing and procurement in local and regionalized systems. And so there's one in Charlottesville and in the DC area. So I'll give you an example
in an
institutional setting. So let's say a university wanted to buy 400 heads of lettuce mm-hmm. for that week. This food hub would purchase lettuce from Jill's farm and from Jacob's farm and procure all of this lettuce. So then these institutional buyers or stores could ship it to them.
So is this like a big warehouse? Yep. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And so when you have these smaller warehouses or distribution centers or hubs, it allows for us to buy locally and creates the means for us to purchase our food close to home, put that money back into the local economy. A lot of that is relationship building though. Like when you talk about food system consulting, yes, I have a business background and I write feasibility studies and business plans. It's also having conversations, figuring out who has what, how do you connect them to it? How to get the producer, the farmer to market, to the store, to the customer. It's a lot of conversations, a lot of listening. And when you do that work, it's slow, but it is very effective. And that's where change happens. And it's not like this fast, beautiful, sexy thing that happens in a week. It's a lot of conversation and figuring out how you grow for certain people. And that's what food system work is about, is that regional food system is really connecting and creating value in your community. And so that's a kind of an overarching view of it.
I appreciate that. Would you say it's more or less expensive or about the same? Do we save money by using food hubs? Can you talk about that a little bit?
For sure. And so the quality of food that you're going to get from a local regional farm, like mm-hmm. it's going to be fresher. Mm-hmm. It's going to have to travel less. And so, yes, that's the thing. This food is cheaper and more of the money goes back to the farmer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Whereas when you're sourcing from another country, there's a lot of stops along the way where that money has to get divvied up. But if that you keep that money in the economy, it does make the prices cheaper. It does increase the quality of food, which means we need to consume less. Mm-hmm. It maintains its flavor. It was grown in the soil that we live on, which it has the microbes and the nutrients that we need for that time of the year. And so there's so many nutritional and human health benefits to that, but also health for the planet as well and sustainability. We can actually continue practicing like that. And even if the world were to shut down again, we know where we can go for our food locally and get it, which is really important to have mm-hmm. those sort of relationships. And we really saw what happened when we didn't have that a couple of years ago.
Yes, we did. So thank you for doing that work. I appreciate that.
I love that work. I love working with farmers in particular. They don't get enough credit for the work that they do to feed us. Many times there is we look at maybe who farmers are, but they are the most resilient, hardworking people that keep our world going. Mm-hmm. And they deserve more of the spotlight because we wouldn't be here today eating this popcorn if it wasn't for them.
I know. We need food to sustain ourselves.
We
do.
And we need to pay the farmers fairly for that.
Yes,
and we need to appreciate them and know they know that their work is valued and like what keeps us going. So I think about that when I eat. I think about where my food comes from. I like mm-hmm. to know where it comes from. I like to think about the land that it was grown on, the work people did to get it to me. And that also makes you appreciate your meal even more too and have gratitude for it.
Yes, as a foodie, I really love my farmers.
Yeah, I do.
I love good food. Mm-hmm. Good food is the best. It's really not only nourishes you, but I feel like it feeds your soul.
Oh, absolutely. And I like to write about that aspect of it too. It's very singular just to look at food as caloric energy. Food is so much more than that. It is connection. Mm-hmm. It's like bringing us here. We're eating this popcorn. It's like coming around a table for a dinner. It's creativity. It's expression. It's so much more than just giving us a little bit of caloric energy. And I love to look at it that way as well.
I love that too. For our laughers aspiring to lead healthier lives, in all that we've shared today and beyond that, what advice or principles would you offer to help them integrate movement, nourishment, and positive mindset?
Well, I think this aligns with a lot of your message too, but we have to enjoy it first.
Mm-hmm.
We have to enjoy what we're doing. Like, to sustain anything, we have to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Why will we get up in the morning and go for a run? Or why will we eat a certain meal if it's not enjoying and nourishing us? And part of like, when I say nourishing is like, it's filling our soul.
Mm-hmm.
Like we must like the food we're eating. And there's ways we can get creative for it and allow it. If we enjoy it, it's good for us too.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there is room for that cookie and that cake and that too. And
I agree with that.
Like in that popcorn, like there's always room for that.
Yeah.
And with our lifestyle too, like I wouldn't be a professional athlete or I wouldn't be getting out of the community in the way that I do if I didn't actually have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make things fun first and foremost. And when we start to do good for ourselves, it's a snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it does take a little bit of courage or take a little bit of energy to go out and like get to that workout class or go hike that mountain. But then we feel so empowered and glad that we did it. And then that carries over to how we want to, the dinner we want to cook for ourselves or the social time that we make to connect with our community and friends, the writing. Then we take that time to do the writing in the evening or gratitude. All of it feeds into itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we start doing that one thing, there's so much carryover. And like watch, like have your eyes open to that magic, like see how it shifts and changes you. And like, who knows the person that you can grow into and expand and become when you set yourself up for those sort of really nourishing activities.
That's so perfect. And I think a great segue to help people get in touch with you. So as we wrap up here, how best can the Laffer stay updated with you on social media or otherwise?
Well, even though I'll be back on social media by the time this podcast launched.
Yeah.
So on like Instagram, my name is Amanda Pressgraves and that's my handle on there. There's LinkedIn, Facebook, email, amanda.pressgraves@gmail.com is another great way to contact me. And my website is amandapressgraves.com and you can get my book and learn more about my projects and work on there as well.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Amanda. Speaking of amazing, you are. And this has been super fun chatting with you today about all the things human-centered design, a mindset for the long term, a whole person body-mind connection, amplification of individual strengths, harnessing neurodiversity, and leading with compassion.
Boom.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, the services you provide, and how you help people elevate their health holistically. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And laughers, to learn more about what Amanda has to offer, be sure to visit her website at amandapressgraves.com. That is Amanda, That is Amanda, AmandaPressgraves.com. Also, don't forget that discount on Prepopsterous using promo code LAFF15 at Prepopsterous.com. That way you can munch on it with me on next week's episode or get it as a gift for someone that you care about in your life. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.